They're playing coy in Vegas, man. They're playing real coy. Both sides just don't want to give up any information. I mean, that's the crazy part of this. Even down to the radio hosts, right? Got a little pump fake maybe. But you know what? Been through a lot on this show the last decade we've been doing it, and we'll persevere.
I was going to say.
There's just no doubt about it, man. There's just no doubt about it. So, anyway.
Time and speed bump.
Nobody wants to give up anything in this game.
Hopefully he's going to get a chance to call in.
Yeah, but, you know, it's just so much secrecy. And, you know, realistically, you know, I think the latest that I saw from Dan was that, you know, kind of, I think Steve actually posed a question to him. It was like, you know, Memphis isn't giving you anything on the quarterbacks. You know, he's like, well, you know, I get it. I wouldn't if I didn't have to either. Mm-hmm. And he's not, actually. He's not announcing a quarterback either. I mean, I think both programs are just sort of operating on the assumption that UNLV is going to start Jackson Arnold, Memphis is going to start Marcus Stokes. You know, if you go on NIL package, there's no doubt that it's going to be Marcus Stokes. But it's not always about that, right? It doesn't really matter what you make. It's about how you perform and how you produce. But it does seem like it's going to be Stokes versus Jackson Arnold. And, you know, right now, like I said earlier in the show, anywhere between 5.5 and 6.5 is what you're going to see right now for UNLV at home.
I know that a lot of the talk will be about the starters at quarterback. I believe in the end it'll be those two. But as we've heard in some of the build-up to this, and something maybe we'll get a chance to ask Steve about, that UNLV backfield with Jaden Thomas in terms of those guys returning, you know, is something that they feel awfully good about. And frankly, it could be what decides the game, whether or not how good their backfield is against your defense. Because, you know, asking Jackson Arnold or Marcus Stokes, for that matter, to come out and win the game in their first one, essentially, of these new teams, is asking a lot. And especially for Dan Mullen on an offense that's got, you know, most of its production from last year in terms of the running backs back, seems like to me that that's where you're going to lean, at least early on, is on those guys. Again, Jade Thomas, you know, one of the best backs thought of in the Mountain West, and so certainly one of the most proven. So, again, we've talked, and we will talk in these next few days leading up about the quarterbacks and the starters being named. Ultimately, they're going to be the guys we expected it to be. Could be the backfields that determine this, or certainly your ability to stop the run, in this case, Memphis's ability or inability to stop the run. Hopefully, Charles Huff has got a group of guys he's familiar enough with that front line, that interior depth up front, that you better know that run's coming.
Yep.
You know, it's not going to be just Jackson Arnold throwing for 40, 50 times here.
Yeah.
This is going to be a run-oriented offense.
Yes.
They'd be fools not to in terms of with the production that they've got coming back.
Yeah, Dan Mullen said yesterday there was a piece up at the Las Vegas Review-Journal where he just talked about how the quarterbacks, you know, are more comfortable maybe than they. I don't know if he was talking about sort of than they were at this time last year or earlier in the off season, but he sounds like he's seeing some progress from both Arnold and Orji, and maybe that's because, like you said, that run game, right? I mean, that's going to be kind of what they're predicated on. And was it last year? I always get my UNLV quarterbacks mixed up. That was 2 years ago with my guy who Sluka. And then he left the team, over 100,000. And then they Haj Malik. Who could ever forget Haj Malik Williams, one of the greatest backup quarterbacks in the history of college football, came in. And then last year it was Calandria, right, who went to Virginia. And I think that was Dan Mullen's first year, so a totally different system. But yeah, I mean, it's probably going to be a little different than it looked last year, I would guess, for UNLV. I think they expect better defensive play. I think they expect more ball control. Because they were definitely a high-flying octane, you know, unit last year.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, and I think that's why you go out and you get a Jackson Arnold, because, you know, you're not going to throw the ball 70 times a game, you know, because that's not really what he does. So it'll be interesting. I mean, it's going to be an immediate stress test for Memphis' defense. Again, I don't know. None of us know anything about it. That's the thing. None of us know anything about these teams. Memphis is still finding out about, you know, that's what Charles Huff was saying the other day. It's like, you know, it's going to be a dogfight against us. We might lose by 100, but it's going to be a dogfight. So you're finding things out, and I'm assuming Dan Mullen is doing the same with his group.
Yeah, Thomas was 7 yards a carry last year, up over 1,000, 1,036, 12 touchdowns, and he'll a 1,000-yard rusher back from last season, one of the best backs in the Mountain West. You figure he'll be one of the featured things out there on Saturday night. So, yeah, all of a sudden stopping the run.
Yeah.
Looks super important there in your first game out.
Yeah.
Guys like Jamon Tapp, he's one of those guys up front that's certainly going to help determine whether or not you can do that.
Yeah. And again, you know, it opened at 3. And again, has sort of been bet consistently. What's interesting that I did notice is that the total got bet all the way up to 59.5 and then got hit back. So, you know, again, it's hard to know exactly what to expect from Charles Huff. I didn't really watch any Southern Miss last year. So I don't know, you know, what kind of offense he's looking to run here, and just, you know, how much he's going to put it in the hands of Marcus Stokes. Like, we know with Ryan Silverfield, you know, they were happy to run the ball quite a bit, and they leaned on the running game, even with Seth Hennigan. We don't really know exactly what it's going to look like, you know, for Charles Huff. But yes, as promised, we got him. He is Steve Cofield. Catch him on Cofield Co. Monday through Friday, ESPN Las Vegas. We're trying to get the Vegas side. And honestly, Steve, we're just trying to get a little alpha. So thanks for the time, man. How's it going?
What's going on? How are you guys?
Things are good. Well, so we're just trying to feel this thing out. You know, from obviously massive game to open up the season for both of these teams. And I'll just get it from sort of the Vegas side. What does this game represent for UNLV football?
Well, I think it's massive. Obviously, they try to aggressively pursue a good non-conference game coming out of the gates at home, and you know, they landed on Memphis, and you know, considering how slim the chances are for a group of six school to make the CFP, I mean, this is, I'm not going to say an eliminator, but it certainly is going to put a lot of things into motion in terms of the strength of conferences. I mean, I think UNLV's schedule is pretty difficult, so the hope that they're going to go unbeaten or have one loss, I think, is kind of a long shot. But that's what they're hoping for. They want to achieve the goal of winning their conference because they haven't been able to do that. Now Boise State's on to the Pac-12. But as far as Memphis goes, I mean, there's a ton of respect here for Memphis. People know, you know, what that school has done, how well the school is funded, and the hopes on the Memphis side and that conference that, you know, they'll be the group of six represented in the CFP.
How much an advantage is there here for Dan, Steve, in the sense that, you know, yeah. Yes, every year's different, and obviously with transfer portal now, you're going to have teams that look different on a year-to-year basis. That said, he's in year two, Charles Huff in year one. While Huff has done this before, he's been a head coach before, you know, you're at a new place, you're finding out what you've got in terms of resources. It feels like, and especially when you look at the backfield, what he's got back, that there, Dan does have the advantage there in terms of knowing what he's got, maybe a little bit of a head start if you're talking about positioning this as a huge group of six game.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that. Obviously, quarterback is in flux, and we could talk about that, but yep. He knows his roster. The biggest thing is everyone knows the system. Last year was a mess defensively. They never really achieved on the defensive end of the field because they had Paul Gunther take over after the original DC bailed right at the beginning of spring, and it just seemed like they never got their footing. I also don't think that they got to recruit to the defense that Gunther wanted to play. It was, you know, it was going to be more of a 3-3-5 before that, and the communication on the defensive side was terrible. They were short a coach. They didn't have a safeties coach, and I thought that hurt them. So a lot of the things are in place that weren't in place a year ago. But and no doubt offensively, like you said, with the experienced backs, with a bunch of the young wide receivers back who know the system, yep. The O-line's coming together. So, yeah, year two I think is I mean, you know, without question, is an advantage over a guy who's trying to build things. And I think Memphis has a lot more newcomers. What is the number, like 70-plus newcomers? Mm-hmm. UNLV, for the first time in the last 4 years, the last 3 years, and they piled up 30 wins, so they turned around the program. The portal's been gigantic for them turning it around. But they also turned over the roster to the tune of like 50-plus players each of those last 3 years. Mullen's first year. This year, they went into the portal. They were aggressive in the portal. But you could tell there were certain positions where they're starting to build depth where they didn't have to go into the portal to get reinforcements.
And you know, to that point, I mean, this number opened 3, 3.5. It's consistently been creeping up as sharp money has been coming in on UNLV. Do you think that is as much a reason as any that you look at a Memphis team that's, you know, new coach, new team, UNLV team that's bringing back, you know, some stability? I know the quarterback's changing, but a lot of other positions, you know, you're getting some continuity. Do you think that sort of explains why we've seen the steady influx of money on UNLV in this game?
Yeah, that's probably the best explanation. And there's a lot of hype right now. I mean, you can see most college football experts out there, and I don't think most are very educated on Group of Six football, but, you know, they're looking for names, they're looking for teams that have a bunch back. So UNLV is probably in most people's top three to get the CFP Group of Six bid. So experience, a little bit of knowledge. I mean, and let's be honest, Dan Mullen brings a lot of cachet to the table. Everyone knows Dan Mullen, and they saw what he did last year, got off to an impressive start. So I think that's a big part of it.
We think that it'll end up being Marcus Stokes that gets the start, and maybe experience, albeit on the Division II level, being the sort of decider there. He's the one that's been on the field over at Air Nolan. John and I were just talking about, before we had you on, sort of been a guessing game on both, but should we lean Jackson Arnold there? You mentioned it in terms of the coming out the starter there for Dan.
By the way, I agree with you. I was saying this yesterday about Stokes. And Nolan, you know, I don't care what level Stokes played at. He played.
Yep.
And Nolan just hasn't played. But you guys would know you're out of practice. Listen, what Dan Mullen has done here with the quarterback situation, by playing at coy, pretty much every UNLV quarterback or UNLV coach of late has done the same thing, where it's like, there's a battle. There's a real battle here. I said about 2 weeks ago, I thought it was like 95-5 in favor of Jackson Arnold. I'd say now it's like 80-20. The cool thing for Alex Georgie is he tries to come back from injury and also tries to come back kind of mentally from getting a little bit wrecked in his experience at Michigan, is that Georgie has started to show those vibes of being a number one. It doesn't mean he's the number one, but he's carrying himself more like a number one. But now, in my mind, Jackson Arnold was brought in for a reason. You know, they spent a decent amount of money on him in replacing Anthony Calandria, the quarterback from last year who went on to Nebraska. I think it's a strong lean to Jackson Arnold. But here's the thing. Mullen's not lying when he says both will play in the first game, because I do think there's going to be packages for Alex Georgie and his legs.
Yep.
That'll be put throughout the game. Now, the weird thing is Arnold is also a pretty good runner, and Georgie's a freaking monster. He's gigantic at like 6'3 and 240. Arnold's a pretty big kid, and they have sort of the same running style in terms of getting downhill. So I think both will play, but I think Jackson Arnold is the guy for UNLV.
We are talking to Steve Cofield, ESPN Las Vegas. All right, I want to turn you to a couple of other items here. Josh Pastner tried to sell UNLV. I had to explain to him that, like, brother, somebody might come in, buy the team, and fire your ass. You know? and that is when he, I think, recognized the seriousness of his mistake. But, like, why was UNLV so mad about it? Why did they make him release? I mean, did anybody really take him seriously? I feel like that was unnecessary for them to make him put a statement out there that he was just kidding.
So, a couple things. That whole comment was sort of taken out of context. Like, if you didn't hear the lead-in, it just sounded like it was this isolated thought about buying the program. He was talking about he was on my show and had talked about this 2 weeks before he went on the TV station, and he said this ownership thing. And when I heard him say it, I was like, yeah, whatever. I don't care. And then it went viral for like 5 days. I'm like, well, I missed again. But we led into the conversation talking about NBA ownership in Vegas, and he flipped it to, well, you know, instead of spending $8 billion on an NBA team, you know, you can own the Rebels. You can get access to the Rebels. You know, it was like this next level VIP thing if someone had stepped up and given millions of dollars. Now, why did he put out a statement? That was not the school. I think most of the school was very happy that they got, you know, 5 days at the end of July. They got attention for, you know, Runner Rebel basketball in no man's land. Now, we have, as all, you know, states do, we have a board of regents that operates, I think, mostly. It's the representation is in both Southern and Northern Nevada, but believe it or not, this state is very split in terms of attitudes and politics. It's a big rivalry, and I think the folks from the Board of Regents said, hey, this ownership thing looks weird. You can't buy the program. You know, we've got another program, Nevada. They don't have the same resources, so there's this constant battle going on between the powers that be that's split in the state. I think they got on them, but I think the school was mostly thrilled, and
yeah,
because they're not stupid. They got
right,
it, like you just said. Like, no one actually believed they were selling the program. It is, hey, be Mike Rapoli, basically, at St. John's.
Yep.
Come in, spend $10 to $12 million. You're going to get super VIP access. You're going to get all these other perks. You get to say, hey, I'm the one who built this team. That's all he was saying. And then I guess the negative of going viral is, and then people start to,
right.
you know, gets the message gets thinned out and doesn't make sense anymore.
Exactly. You know, you mentioned there's so much hype about the football program. I am curious about the basketball side of it, because I know it wasn't, you know, an amazing season, but man, there were a lot of really, really good wins tucked in there. I mean, they beat Grand Canyon. They beat Boise twice. They beat Utah State twice. They came to Memphis and packed Memphis up. They beat Stanford with a first round draft pick in Ibuka Okori. So I know there were, you know, a lot of good wins tucked into that season. How are people feeling about Josh as the coach there at UNLV? And I know trying to do what kind of Penny Hardaway is trying to do at Memphis, which is restore it back to, you know, the days of old.
I think people are mostly in a wait and see. Last year, the crowds didn't show up. But he also walked into a program that has had declining attendance for like 8 years. People have been frustrated, and they're not making the NCAA tournament. You got to make the tournament in a conference like the Mountain West, the way it is now, or you know, the past with the five schools leaving. You have to finish top three in the conference. UNLV has certain expectations. The fans here now, there's a lot of competition for their entertainment dollar. We've got NBA coming and baseball coming, but already with the Raiders and especially the Vegas Golden Knights. So Pastner realizes he's got to win, but I think you saw enough signs last year. You mentioned all the quality moments. He can coach. They run a nice style. I think he's retooled the team really nicely this year, where they're not as big. They've got like 8 guards in the fold, so I think they're going to go, which will be a good thing. But bottom line is, they got to win. They got to win at a high level. You got to win, you know, probably 22, 23, 24 games in the regular season, which is not going to be easy. He loaded up the schedule, and that's the way the fans are going to come back, because people here, if it's not a hot ticket, if it's not the place to be, they will not show up.
Steve, Dan wins the Mountain West, maybe even makes a college football playoff. Obviously, you know, what Boise State does will help determine that. But is he? How quickly would he be out of there in your mind? How quickly would he flip it into a, you know, Power Four type job?
I don't know. I don't know if he has certain spots he wants to go back to. I know the Florida thing, you know, kind of beat him up mentally. Mm-hmm. So I think he's really happy now. From what I hear, his family is really thrilled with where they live. In Las Vegas, they're down in Southern Highlands, the whole golf community. They've built up a nice community down there, friends. He's got a lot of money backers here, a lot of people who didn't give money to the program. Now, that said, I mean, if he has a big year, then someone could come in and offer him, you know, $6 to $10 million. I don't know if he has, you know, this urge to get back to, say, the SEC and prove that he was wrong by Florida.
Yeah.
I've heard him talk about the future, like, hey, these are things we're going to do, you know, next June and July. So he's into it. And here's the other thing. And again, this doesn't guarantee a damn thing, but they just brought in a really big freshman class, and they did really well in the freshman class. They have 28 commits, which is the biggest class they've ever had for 2027. So he's not building it like a quick fix with a bunch of transfer portal guys. He's building it seemingly so that he stays here. But again, those forces and all that money, that's tough to turn down.
And then last thing, Steve, what's the vibe in Vegas about, you know, the potential NBA team? Is it just sort of like seen as a foregone conclusion that an NBA team is coming? What's the excitement level out there?
Yeah, I think it's seen as a foregone conclusion that we're the lead. And you can see there's really not much information on Seattle and potential ownership. There's at least 4 groups public. And Adam Silver said there's several more that haven't gone public with interest in owning the team, which is pretty impressive. We're talking about a $7 to $10 billion price tag. Now, interestingly enough, the Lakers just got bought by, I think, the lead group. Bob Iger and Josh Kushner were the lead group, and obviously have plenty of money. They were interested in getting the Vegas team, but no, this team will go crazy as long as the basketball team is competitive. You know, sooner than later, I still believe, in spite of the hockey team being here and doing really, really well, that this is a basketball town. Down deep, it's a football town as well. Everywhere is an NFL town, but no, I think the excitement is going to be sky high. And it just depends on the NBA expansion rules. If they stick it to them and, you know, they have to build for 5 years, that's not going to be great. But if they give, you know, pretty liberal expansion rules and they can be at least around 500 or challenge for a playoff spot in, you know, year 2 or 3, people are going to be really fired up.
Steve, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate
your
time.
Steve. Great stuff.
You got it, guys. Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks, Steve.
Steve Cofield from Cofield & Company out there in Las Vegas does ESPN Radio in Vegas. So good stuff. I'm sure he's I don't know how. Do you know how long he's been doing it out there? Any idea?
Long time since I left. I think probably 25 plus.
Man, so imagine the transformation of the sports scene out there in the last 25 years that he's been doing it. I mean, probably,
when I left 30 years ago, the big development 35 years ago was the racetrack. they built that track, and that was the start of it, because then by then the running Rebels had petered out.
Right.
And that was
right.
It. They were done.
Yeah, I mean, it's gone from just that to, you know, obviously the Raiders are there, the Aces are there, UNLV football is a real thing now.
NBA
team is coming.
He hit on something. They really got a kiss from the NHL because of the expansion rules.
The
because
Knights,
they made
absolutely.
It they made it so they could get really heavy and great early. These NBA teams, a lot of times, you know, like remember Charlotte? I mean, they got Larry Johnson, but like they were crap. Vancouver, you know, some of these teams were bad.
Yep.
So you need to be able to get players if you're going to be competitive.
Yeah.
You know.
I totally agree. It's about the players. I agree.
Yeah.
Because
you could suck, and they'll be like, yeah, man, remember the Knights came here, and they were awesome. No, what is this?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So anyway, good stuff there from Steve Cofield. We'll come back. Lots more to come. Jessica Benson's going to join us at 11:25. She was out at the Memphis football facility today.
Yeah.
It was All Access Day with Grind City Media. Jessica Benson, part of Grind City Media. So we'll talk to her about being out there and brushing shoulders with greatness, right? The next up-and-coming, you know, coaches and stars for Memphis Athletics. She was there. So we'll do that at 11:25. J&J, 90.9 FM, ESPN.
Yeah, man. Oh, I saw some devastating news yesterday. I got to tell you. Belmont Grill closing in Memphis. That is no cap. I saw the reports from several stops, but after 90 some odd years, 42 years, I should say, but it's a 90-year-old building, but it's been operating as Belmont Grill for the last 42 years. It's going to suspend day-to-day operations on the 29th. So as Memphis begins operations for its football season, Belmont Grill will suspend its operations day to day. You know, and here's the thing. Like, did I go to Belmont Grill a ton? I didn't. I have been several times. You know, I randomly remember going and taking Charles Fishman. Charles Fishman, when he was in town for a book event, we went to Belmont Grill because it was just in the area, and we wanted to take him to a place that was, you know, kind of uniquely Memphis, and so we took him to Belmont Grill. But, you know, restaurants close, right? We've seen so many come and go in the Memphis area, and individually, in a vacuum, one restaurant closing is not the end of the world. It happens. It is business, and I don't know what the economics were. I don't know, the location kind of stinks. The parking stinks.
Is that not the same, I mean, general location as Houston's, which has something going back up right there?
Yes, same, you know, that's that corner there. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what the intersection is, but it's like when you have a string of them that, you know, the city starts to lose a little bit of its soul. Westie's closed downtown, I think, over the weekend. You know, who could forget those hot fudge pies? That's what Brett McMurphy remembers about Memphis. When he came to Memphis, he said, who was it that sold those hot fudge pies? It was Westie's.
Yeah,
it's close.
When you tried to revisit that with him, he kind of downplayed it a little bit.
I mean,
bit,
perhaps.
But, okay.
But now
it's Mendenhall, South Mendenhall,
yeah,
Poplar,
yeah.
Right there where those
meet. And now you have Belmont Grill, which, you know, obviously you pass by it. You're on Poplar. You pass by it all the time. It is now closed.
I've always passed by it.
And obviously you've never stopped in it.
I've never stopped. This is one that you've got me on because I've been here a long time.
Yeah. I thought Belmont Grill, well, you'd have a little bit more reverence for it.
Well, I mean, I will go to the Chick-fil-A that's right in that area right,
right
there. But and also a Huey's that's in that area as well. Have not been to that Belmont Grill. It's unfortunate. Maybe I could have saved it.
Yeah, I don't think you could have saved it, man. I really don't.
I feel terrible.
But I do understand that, you know, it's one of those things where it's a Memphis institution. It's not a chain. It's a local Memphis thing. And the reality of it is we're just going to lose those.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to lose Belmont Grills. We're going to lose Westies. We're going to lose these restaurants that, you know, you come to know it. But if they're not chains, if they're not Huey's, if they're not, you know, we're just unfortunately going to lose them in Memphis because we can't support. We cannot, and we did for 42 years, but and inevitably, when the economics get tough, we're just going to have a hard time. So I do
hate
that.
In that case, too, you're in a 90-year-old building, so it becomes, is it worth it to, you know, are we going to fix this whole building or just get out? I think you got plenty of restaurants that are doing just fine, John. You act like every single one of them is closing.
Well, not every single one, but
no,
I feel like we've had a string. I feel like we've had quite a few. Just anecdotally, I just saw the Westies close, and like we didn't even like blink. You know, like, oh, there goes Westies. You know, Belmont Grill has closed. Houston's got, you know, I don't know what they did. That there was a big crime problem there on Poplar.
And something getting built right back in its place.
Yeah. Yeah. What do we know what it is?
Not off the top of my head. I think it is. It's food though. Yeah. I thought I read.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't know. I didn't go to Belmont Grill every week, so it's not like.
So stop acting like Memphis is crumbling because this thing's leaving town. Using this as an example here.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I just hate to see the local restaurants go. I hate to see that because it doesn't suggest a vibrant, healthy community when local restaurants like this.
Why don't you go over there to Privé? Go pay Gotti some. Go patron, go help his restaurant.
I don't want.
That's local. Why don't you go over there and support?
They don't need my support, bro. They good.
Mm-hmm.
They are they still open?
Yes, Privé is still rocking.
Yeah, I mean Gotti can bank.
And
all
I think
that.
We just changed now, and you should like this to where you have to be 25 or up. I'm pretty sure we just changed. Maybe it's 30 or up.
Yeah.
But we're going to older crowd over there, trying to keep some of that riffraff out. No, you'll appreciate that.
Well,
so again, we're trying to get you over there.
That's not my policy. Well, it's going to be tough. That's going to be tough. I'll just say that on the front end. In fact, it's not happening. Okay. I want to end the speculation right now.
Okay.
You will not see me ever at Privé. Will you see me at Majestic Grill downtown? Will you see me at Folks Folly maybe?
Well, no, we'll see you at Simmons Bank eating a all beef hot dog.
Fleming's, although it's been quite some time since I've been to any of those. You might see me there. Privé, it's just not gonna be for me. You know, it's just not my. I don't. Are they a steakhouse? Is that what they're?
Privé.
Yeah.
I don't know what you would call
it. What's the vibe there?
I've only been once to eat.
Yeah.
Actually.
It's fine dining, they say.
And so it was actually Jarnell Stokes' draft party.
Oh wow!
Believe it or not.
Yeah.
And so if I remember correctly, it was like a Southwest fair.
Okay.
If I'm channeling my Calkins here.
A Southwest fair.
Yeah, I don't know if it's still that. Like a Southwest themed thing, you know, in terms of some of the food. Now, I don't know if it's still like that. It's been a long time since Jarnell Stokes was drafted by the Grizzlies, as you know.
Yeah, it has. That's probably been like, what, 9 years?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And say in the club scene itself, I was too old.
Right. Well, anyway, look, sometimes we start talking about stories on the show, topics on the show, and you just never quite know where they're going to go. You know, I kind of intended on this being a heartfelt eulogy for Belmont.
I know. I'm surprised, you know, FedEx didn't jump in and save it here, you know, no. The way you talk about it.
But
something that really could have been saved.
You know, I also do think, like, it's one of those things where maybe it was like this legend, your own mind, you pass it, and obviously there weren't enough people in there. I hate to see anything close. I hate to see people's business and you know, because when it's a local thing, it's love. You know, it's about love. It's about passion for the community. You're not doing this for money necessarily. I mean, you are, but you're probably not making a ton of money. You're doing it because you have a community and you have a group of people that come and are regulars, and you know, now they have to go up the street to Huey's. I mean, that's so they'll be okay, and life will go on in Memphis, and there will be new restaurants and stuff like that. But you know, 42 years is a hell of a run. You know, for you know, especially for a non-chain. I don't know if they ever expanded. Maybe they did, and it turned into Forest Hill Grill there. I think there was maybe some talk of that, but yeah, it could be one of those places that was just it had a higher reputation because of the urban legend than what it actually was. I don't know. I ate there a couple times. I hate it for the city. You know, I never want to see restaurants close. I want to see restaurants open and thrive. And I realize we can't support everybody.
The Houston thing's got to be a multi mixed use facility, and you know, all kinds of shopping and all kinds of stuff out there. This is probably something where they, you know, all that's being renovated and changed anyway. And maybe it's something where you got out.
Yeah.
You know, and got out at a price that you. That can help you.
Yeah.
In terms of this has been your life's work or whatever else. Maybe you got a deal in terms of an offer for that land or the rest of it with everything that's getting developed over there.
Yeah.
Perhaps it'll be an upgrade for every, you know, that makes Memphis look better at that corner of Southland and all in Poplar.
That corner,
frankly,
tough.
It's probably needed an upgrade for a while. Hell, yeah. I remember it was a service merchandise. back before the Paradiso.
Yep.
And you talk about Belmont Grill.
Yeah, Belmont Grill, man.
Let's get the new in, get the old out. Well, sounds like it's coming.
I think you should support, I mean, you should go to Belmont Grill before the 29th, like we go to the FESJC.
It says the project will involve demolition of existing structures to make way for a two-story, approximately 50,000-square-foot building featuring roughly 25,000 square feet of office space, retail space, and a bunch of other stuff. Restaurant called The Tradition. Bro, all that's getting developed and upgraded. That's good news for Memphis.
Yeah.
It's good news for Memphis.
That's the old Houston joint?
Yeah, right there at Houston's. And all of that is that same area right there, South Mendenhall and Poplar. So that's much needed. And frankly, the Paradiso probably welcomes it.
Yeah.
In terms of the upgrades around it.
Yeah, I would imagine.
You see the story? I mean, the development looks fantastic. So that's something that's much needed around that area, to be honest with you.
Right. Well, I think, again, you know, Munn says we got to go out to the FESJC before it leaves. We need to go support Belmont Grill for it.
No, again, upgrading. We're upgrading. And we salute Belmont Grill, John.
Yes.
Progress is what this feels like.
Okay. We had to kill off Belmont to progress in Memphis. Anyway, yeah, I just saw that news. And you know, Westie's closed. No more hot fudge pies. So we got a lot of progressing we got to do.
Dude, I mean, we got to stop giving you segments where you just talk about stuff closing. Because it's depressing as hell. Let's get John on openings in Memphis. Things in Memphis.
I'm ready.
It feels like you need it in your life.
I want to talk about openings.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We'll get on it.
But salute. Salute to Belmont Grill after 40 years in business. We'll come back. Jessica Benson is going to join us at 11:25. We'll talk to her about Memphis football. She was out there today at the facility and more. Stick around. J&J, 90.9 FM, ESPN.
You know, there was a day back in the day where the NBA used to sort of run Christmas Day, right? We'd wake up, we'd open the presents, and then we'd watch NBA games all Christmas Day. And then the NFL said, we're coming in and taking over. It's Roger Goodell and his conquest to take over the world, to take over your week. And certainly wouldn't apologize to Adam Silver. What we got this year, we got Bears, Green Bay. It's only the longest rivalry in the NFL. You've also got Bills, Broncos. And that one, and then Rams Seahawks, pretty dang good.
Yep.
And I would say it trumps anything the NBA is doing. It's five games there on Christmas Day. That said, in the theme of world domination, Roger Goodell says he has no doubt that NFL teams will one day play outside the United States. Okay, at some point there will be NFL teams outside the USA. He said in an interview with former NFL player Marcus Kuhn for German broadcaster RTL/NTV TV. I have no doubt that this will happen one day. Now, he makes it sound like that could be far, far in the future. Perhaps not, though. On the prospect of hosting a Super Bowl overseas, Goodell said, there are definitely international cities that could host something like that, but we would like to see an NFL team in such a city first. And it got me to asking John the question off air before we came back. Can't put it over in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Right? 'Cause you got to travel over there, and would have to travel regularly.
Yep.
This isn't a deal where you can just plop down Jacksonville for a couple of weeks over there.
Yep.
And then come back, you know, bye weeks, all that included. You're going to have a team traveling back and forth if it's over there. So if it's going to be outside the U.S., but has to be close enough.
Right.
Could it be? And maybe it is. Maybe it's Mexico City, where the NFL's had a you know, relationship with for a while. The NFL's history with international regular season games, in fact, dates back to 2005 when the Cardinals beat the 49ers in Estadio Azteca in Mexico City. We were just talking about Estadio Azteca during World Cup.
Yep. Yep. And you can't, like, I mean, there's a way logistically, I guess, if you insisted on Europe, but probably not without a strategic disadvantage to because like
teams in that division,
yeah,
right?
Well, because you would like the only way it feels like it would work is if you gave the team that had to visit over there the bye week before to get over there and get adjusted. But then that would mean that London or wherever is playing a team off a bye week every home game, which is obviously a huge disadvantage. And then you're not going to be able to give them, you know. I mean, I guess what you could do is you would basically have to give them like four straight road games in the States, and then you're on the road for four straight games. So there's really just no way to do that, honestly.
That's why it's got to be here.
It's got to be
on this side of the
water. It's got to be North America.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, and obviously, like, they haven't done anything in Canada, so that would make you feel like Canada is not able to have an NFL team I don't know if that has anything to do with the Canadian Football League.
CFL bylaws.
Yeah, I don't know if there's something that restricts that.
Is that really where Goodell cannot roam in Canada because of their – is that the one place he can't take over in terms of world domination because of Canada's strict CFL bylaws?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like
– Do we play any exhibition games up there?
I've never –
Doesn't feel like it.
They are legally and allowed to do it, but the according to Gemini – logistical hurdles, currency differences, travel logistics, stadium requirements, and the presence of the CFL have prevented a permanent franchise. So, and I guess too, like I could be wrong on this, but one factor is that Buffalo kind of gets adopted as the Canadian team. Like a lot of, because I guess it's close enough to the border up there that it does get adopted a little bit. And so you kind of steal Canadians a little bit without having to put a team there. I don't know, but that seems to be one, you know, But from 2008 to 2013, the Bills did play a regular season game and a preseason game once a year at the Rogers Center in Toronto.
So okay.
They did do that.
I didn't realize that.
But it seems like they have moved on from Canada as a site for a team. But yeah, Mexico City
makes two.
Yeah, because it's got a central time zone, I think. You know, so it's the only place if you're going to expand where you can do it.
What division are we putting them in? Careful. just the way you were smiling.
It had to be this. It had to be. Well, where is Mexico? Could it be the West? Could it be like the could it be like the NFC West?
Yeah.
We got to have two. How are we going to do this?
There has to be another team to do this any kind of way we're going to do it equally. And there's still no way you're going to be able to add a team to every division.
No, they're more sort of. I mean, they're really in the middle, like. Literally, like, if you just draw a line down North America, they're, like, straight in the middle. So they would probably have to go, like, I mean, Houston's in the AFC South. So that would make sense. Add them to the Titans division. I like that. AFC South, final answer.
Okay.
That's where I'm putting them.
Okay.
NFC South would make sense, too, if you want to throw them in there with the crappy division, you know. I think AFC or NFC South would be my final answer there. But I mean, you're gonna have unbalanced divisions. You're gonna have 16. You're gonna have five teams in two divisions. How the hell are we gonna manage that?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It feels like there'll have to be expansion of more than one, at least multiple teams. Maybe you're just talking about two, but I don't think you. I think you start stretching yourself thin. You're talking about going past two, but I don't think you'll be seeing it as just one expansion team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're gonna have 10 international games starting next year. And the league also voted to strip teams' ability to protect any home games from international play. So no matter what, everybody's going to end up losing a home game at some point to international. That's not really something that, like, and I know we talked about going to the Bears game, but it's really not something that, like, I'm dying to do. Like, oh, let me go to the Liverpool to see the NFL game.
No, but they pack it out enough.
Oh, they definitely. The people that live
there.
They
don't need us to go.
No doubt.
Right.
No doubt. I would rather
Anymore,
go to like
popular
the
enough.
Olympics or something like that. I'd rather go. If I'm going to go to an event overseas, I would want it to be like something like that.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to
no, I'm
an
with
American
you.
Product.
100%.
You know? I can just watch this here. I can just go to the – I can go to Nashville. I don't have to go to – it is an excuse to get over there if you just want to go to London or something, but I'd rather not. So, anyway, yeah, the NFL is taking over more international games in 2027, and, you know, will we see – you know, a Mexico City team, it feels like it's inevitable. They are just going to, they're like a black hole. They're just going to suck up everything they can until they're satisfied. So anyway, that's the latest from Roger Goodell. We'll come back with the rundown. We'll get into plenty of stuff. Got NFL preseason week two that starts on Thursday. Got lots to get to on the other side. Stick around. J&J, 92.9 FM, ESPN.